Bobby Thomas amongst those waiting in the middle. And looking to make his move now! 7,500 Coventry City fans roar like they haven't roared in decades! Is tonight the night they make it back to the Premier League? Bobby Thomas writes his name into Coventry City folklore.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yes, here to talk for another half an hour about football and about the exciting denouement of the 25-26 season. Because it is exciting, isn't it? It's very much exciting now. Now the excitement has been injected back in the Premier League, isn't it, Jan?
Well, how exciting is it for you, though, Graham?
Not very excited at all, no.
But for us mere bystanders, it's very exciting. Yeah, it was an excellent round of fixtures, cracking games all over the shop. I even enjoyed seeing Sunderland lose, not because they lost, but just seeing their fighting spirit to come back from 3-1 down with fewer than 10 minutes to go and almost winning it in the last minute, only to be cruelly denied at the other end. But what a brilliant performance. That was a cracking game. And Forest turning on the style against Burnley, against only Burnley, but they're in with a shout of staying up. And then, of course, we had the Everton-Liverpool game. It's Bournemouth's boring derby in the entire universe. And then, of course, the City-Arsenal game was what it was. Maybe we'll talk about it, or maybe we won't, because Graham is in charge of the microphones. But yeah, it was a great weekend in the top division, and there were a few other things sorted out in other divisions as well, which was all very exciting.
Well, I'd love to talk in depth about the Arsenal-City game. I really would. But, you know, at this stage of the season, there is just so much to talk about. So I will talk about it for a while. But hey, look, we've got so many other things. Look, we've got Coventry were promoted. We've got the upcoming FA Cup semi-finals. Four English teams in European competitions. We've got a woman manager taking charge of a Bundesliga side, a top five European side for the first time ever at the weekend. We've got Leicester almost going down 10 years after they won the Premier League title. This is how much we've got to talk about. I'm not sure, Terry, how much I can really devote to City against Arsenal. I just don't know how much I can do it for.
Yeah, no, and it's not like none of us saw it coming, is it, Graham? I mean, like, it's not exactly news, really, frankly, is it?
Well, it's not really, is it?
I think we all knew this was going to happen, didn't we? I mean, we thought this is where it's going to end. It's going to be, like, City are going to beat them, and then there'll be a really amusing social media meme involving Mikel Arteta and Kevin Keegan, and which is really what it's all about. I mean, otherwise, it's not for the memes, is it? You know, I mean, otherwise, it's just 22 blokes kicking a ball around, isn't it? So, I listened to the game on the radio, and I didn't even see it. So I think you're right. If you wanted to, happy to gloss over. It's up to you. The floor is yours.
I'm here for questions, guys. So if you want to ask me questions, there you go.
Do you think that they have it in them to win the league? Bearing in mind that if City do get something at Burnley, and I think that's a fairly small if, actually.
Yeah.
That they won't necessarily have the destiny in their hands. I mean, from what you've seen over the last few weeks/months, do you feel that they can do this, or are you super, super pessimistic, Arsenal dude?
I'm not super pessimistic, but I do think that City are the favourites now. I was actually quite heartened by the performance from Arsenal. A lot of players coming back and looking pretty good. There are still obvious deficiencies around the side. Problems at fullbacks have just caused us problems over the last month now, because it's a really, really troubling position now. But at least we had some tens, which we didn't have for the League Cup final. So positives to take out from it. Yeah, you could say, oh, it would have been different had we not hit the post twice. But really, I don't think City were in any danger of losing control of that game. So, as I say, positives. If you say, do you think Arsenal could win all five of their remaining games? I'd say, yes, they can. Whether they can win them by a bigger goal margin than City can win their five games, because I think they're certainly on for doing that, is another thing entirely. But yeah, I think that's what it's going to come down to now, isn't it? It's going to come down to who can stick the most goals past their opponents in the next month or so.
Well, the good news is your last game of the season is against Crystal Palace, and you always score a hatful against Crystal Palace. So, well, almost always. So there's an opportunity there. And if Palace are in the Conference League final, they may well be keeping their powder dry on that particular
day. They may well be. But of course, City are playing Palace that week as well, I think, aren't they?
Probably, yes.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it depends on, because obviously with Palace in the Conference League still, yeah. But yes, they'll have to do that at some point. So
yeah,
there's not much choice, is there really, actually? Because if Palace, especially if Palace are in the final.
Yeah.
Could well be that Crystal Palace may have some say on this. And I hope you admire the way that I have made this about Crystal Palace.
I do. Jan, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, as Terry said, I think we could all see this was coming. But they played very, very well, I thought. And I think you're doing them a little injustice. I thought that they could have done something there. I think they created enough chances to snatch something there. But you could still win the Champions League. So would all this be forgotten? Would that little bottle of Arsenal tears that flashed up on the screen last week be all forgotten if you managed to take home the biggest prize in Europe?
Maybe. I tell you, it will be forgotten if the Premier League pulled their finger out and actually charged City. But hey, when's that ever going to happen, eh? But
Never.
Never. Of course, it's never going to happen. The 115ers are going to get away with it again. I honestly don't know. Arsenal haters are going to enjoy watching Arsenal not win, even if they win the Champions League. I don't think it will matter to them. Arsenal fans, I think they would be very happy to win the Champions League. We are notoriously bad in European finals. In my lifetime, I've seen us in, I'm not trying to think, 5, 6, and I think we've only won one. So I'm not really holding out much hope, because we are in the easy half of the draw. We're in the half of the draw. Once Barcelona had gone out, there were teams on one half of the draw who have won the European Cup very recently. And then the other half of the draw, there were teams that have never won the European Cup. And we're in the side of the teams that have never won the European Cup. So I'm looking at this and thinking, I think we can get past Atleti. Atleti, they just had their Copa del Rey final against Real Sociedad, which they lost on penalties in the end. But going into the final against either PSG or Bayern, which I think everyone's looking at saying that's the real final in this thing, because those are two teams who are coasting in. Well, Bayern are already champions. PSG, they probably would be champions if they had actually played all their games instead of postponing them to play in the Champions League. So I think the winner is going to come out of that half of the draw. But hey, it'd be great to get to a final. And hopefully Arsenal just have a better final, because, as I say, most of the finals I've seen them play in, they've been absolutely appalling. So yes, got that to look forward to, maybe. Any other questions?
Well, I think we should move on. I think this is a difficult and painful subject, and I think we should move on from it. We can dissect Arsenal season at the end of the season.
We can indeed. City do have to go and play Bournemouth, who are on a bit of a tear at the moment. So maybe Bournemouth could do us a favour, because they certainly did one against us the other week. But Terry, their manager is on notice. Now, we've been talking quite a lot about managers who will be leaving in the summer. And Andoni Areola confirmed he was leaving Bournemouth. And they've already named a replacement for him while he's serving notice. Who is it, Terry? And what do you know about him?
Oh, it's Marco Rosa, who I would like to think is not an unfamiliar name amongst people, because he was a prominent Bundesliga coach. Both at, I say both, at three clubs. At Throth, at Borussia Mönchengladbach, and then Borussia Dortmund, and then most recently at RB Leipzig. And yeah, coached with a degree of distinction for two of those three clubs. He got fired by Leipzig because his final season there wasn't so good, but he won them their first trophy at Leipzig. He did a very good job at Gladbach, got them into the Champions League, got them out of the group stage of the Champions League, back when we had group stages, remember them. Not quite so impressive with Dortmund, but not terrible by any stretch. Just, I think that there was perhaps an expectation to do more. And yeah, since he was let go at Leipzig last season, I want to say, he's kind of been not doing anything, which is a little bit of a surprise because his reputation took a little bit of damage at Leipzig, but not, I would have thought, sufficient to prevent him from getting another job. But his decision, I guess, to hold out, as I'm sure he probably has held out, I can't believe he hasn't been offered positions, has paid off because he's landed himself a Premier League gig and a pretty sweet Premier League gig as well. So yeah, Marco Rosa coming to Bournemouth at the end of June when his contract starts. So yeah, that's really interesting news and a really interesting appointment.
Mm. Smart time to do it as well, isn't it? You actually have a proper handover, which you don't normally get with bosses, do you? And then, of course, he's got a whole pre-season to get to know the players. Yeah, it feels like a pretty smart appointment, I think.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with it, really. I mean, I think there's a lot of voices around thinking, well, this is weird.
Mm.
You've got a manager who isn't going to be there, and he's still there picking the teams and sorting out the rest of the season, trying to get them qualified for a decent European slot. And they seem to be playing really good football at the moment. But I don't think it's that strange. I think, as Jan says, it seems like a good thing to do. It shows that there is continuation there and that the club have got it all sorted. Terry, do you understand the confusion with some people or the fact that they don't like the idea of it?
I don't see why people would be confused. It's pretty straightforward. But yeah, it is unusual, and it's very unusual in England. It's less unusual in other countries. In fact, Marco Rosa, when he left Borussia Mönchengladbach, he was still their coach, and it was announced that he would join Dortmund the following season while still as a coach. So that was a slightly different scenario. And it is suggested, actually, that he lost the dressing room towards the end of the season, and that affected their season. But this is different. Marco Rosa does not have an existing club. And so really, I think it's a judgment call really on the owners at Bournemouth to say, well, how is this going to affect the dressing room if we make this announcement now? And I would imagine that probably Areola has been consulted as to whether or not it would be wise to reveal this now, or whether we think it'll, you know, upset the dressing room. And I guess, you know, I would assume that they've probably all been pretty grown up about the whole thing. They said, well, yeah, we know he's going, and actually this is the guy who's taking over. So it's not usual in England to happen, because football tends to be a lot more chaotic in the way it's done. And I can see why, therefore, people might be, I don't know, maybe a little bit alarmed by it. But I don't think there's any cause for concern about how Bournemouth are going to play the remainder of their fixtures this way. It's just unusual. It's customary more in England to keep a lid on these things until the end of the season, assuming that you actually have the foresight to make these kind of appointments in advance. I don't think for a moment Palace know who they're going to hire at the end of the season, and they've known that Glass has been leaving since before Christmas. So it's probably unusual and weird because it's kind of efficient and grown up. And we're not used to that, that level of efficiency and maturity.
What can we expect to see, Terry, in Marco Rosa's side?
Well, I think Marco Rosa built his teams very much on efficiency and organisation, getting the best out of limited squads. That's where he succeeded very well at Mönchengladbach. And I think that's maybe where he is slightly disappointed at Dortmund, because I think it was felt that he wasn't quite getting the best out of what was a better team. Mm-hmm. Leipzig was a more interesting story, I think, because Leipzig is one of the bigger clubs, more successful. That is to say, it's not a bigger club at all, but one of the better teams in the Bundesliga. But because it does lose players, it's kind of got a false perception of itself in the food chain. And I think that's what caught Marco Rosa unawares. Yeah, I mean, like a lot of coaches, I think he's kind of seen as having a reputation for being a little bit short term. You know, I think he's a 3-year guy, but I think that suits Bournemouth very, very well. Tactically, I don't think I'm clever enough to really sort of like get any kind of tactical breakdown, but Marco Rosa is a pragmatic coach, not an ideological one. He doesn't have a philosophy. He's not another Russell Martin. And that's exactly what middle-class Premier League football clubs need. They need tactical pragmatists to come in, assess the qualities of the players and get the best out of them. And I think that's what we'll see. So I don't think Bournemouth fans should panic that he's going to come over and be all German. You know, I think he'll look at that and say, yeah, long throws for the win and do that. mean, I've got reasons to be a kind of agin Bournemouth and the way they go about things. I mean, like, you know, their ownership, it's a funny situation that's going on there. There's a lot of money going into that club for what is a very, very small club. But what you can say about them is that they know what they're doing. They've been very, very competent and they're running that club extremely well. I am certain that they will have done their due diligence and looked at his tactics and seen if it meets the profile of the squad. It didn't occur to me that they would go for Rosa at all, but now that they've said it, it seems like a sensible appointment to me. Mm.
There was other big news from Germany this week. Bayern won the title, as I mentioned earlier, but no surprise there. They basically won the title back in November. But Terry, there was a bigger story, I would say, this weekend, and that was the first game for Maria Luisa Etter in charge of Union Berlin. Now, she's the interim manager until the end of the season. And unfortunately, it didn't start off great. Her first game at home ended up losing to Wolfsburg. Now, I'm sure there'll be plenty of the bottom feeders from social media will certainly have plenty to say about that result, because Wolfsburg are awful. But I've only seen the highlights of that game, and the two goals that Wolfsburg scored were worldies. And it was a game that, on the stats at least, Union Berlin dominated. Terry, Maria Luisa Etter has been around in the Bundesliga for a while now. So it's just another thing from Germany that perhaps is more surprising over here than it is over there?
I would probably suggest it would still be a surprise over there. But only because I think that people have certain attitudes and values about women and women's roles in football that a lot of men in the UK do. Maria Luisa Etter has actually coached this first team once before. She was the interim coach for three games and got 4 points from those three games. And that was when the coach that she was working for lamped Leroy Sané during a game and he got a ban. And so she stepped in and she did okay. She's also been coaching the under-19s and has been doing extremely well there. So the players know her. The club knows her. She's due to go off at the end of the season to coach the Frauen Bundesliga first team. So she'll be coaching the women's team, and she signed a contract for that. That's already happening. So this is an interim position. So they were just looking for somebody to come in who knows the players and whom the players know to be able to do that. So it actually, if you were to remove the gender from this, it's a perfectly straightforward move that a lot of clubs do, particularly a club like Union, whom, you know, they're an established Bundesliga club, but they don't have a huge amount of money. I don't think they can necessarily go splashing around, you know, looking to find the German version of Big Sam to come in and look after them until the end of the season. And they tend, clubs, well, they, I was about to say Bundesliga clubs tend not to do that, but they really do, actually. I'm talking rubbish. Otherwise, Friedhelm Funkel wouldn't still be getting employed. They do tend to do that. But Union, I think, see themselves as being a little bit more progressive. Not in the let's hire a woman kind of way, but in a let's promote somebody from within for the remainder of these games who can knows the club and can look after the team. And I, you know, hopefully it will work out. I do hope it will work out, because it is clearly an awkward situation to bring a female coach in as a men's team. And, you know, the clamour, you know, it can be bad for the argument there should be more women coaches in the men's game if she is unsuccessful. But there's quite a gap between third from bottom. It's about 7-ish points, maybe. They'll probably be okay. But it was sufficient. You know, it was necessary for them, to fire Stefan Baumgart. They lost 3-1 to Heidenheim. And they just probably felt that they needed a change. So they'll probably will be okay, whatever happens. But what you really want to see is you want to see her doing well. And yeah, as you sort of point out, Graham, on another game, maybe 7 times out of 10, Union win that game against Wolfsburg. And it's just a bit annoying. It's just the football gods playing havoc with things.
Well, as I've said, listeners, we've got plenty to talk about this week. You didn't think we would, did you? But yes, we have so much to talk about. And we have to talk about what's going on in the Championship at the moment. Just for all those Tottenham fans out there, just so that they know what life's going to be like next season. You've got to give me something this week. You've got to give me something. Come on. Jan, Coventry got their promotion. That's a bit of a fairy tale, isn't it? It's good to see them back. But at the other end of the table, it looks like Leicester are going down. It looks really bad for them, doesn't it? And it's, what, 10 years now since they were champions of the Premier League and they could be facing up to being in League One next season, couldn't they?
They could. Quite the fall, isn't it? Quite the fall from grace. I was reading something there to Ranieri. He was talking about the season that they won the title, and they started out with a target of 40 points and ended up winning the title. And I have to say, in the Premier League era, I don't think there's been as exciting a season or an interesting a season or a surprising season. You know, the top division in most of the big divisions across Europe, you know, it tends to be a select few that kind of win it. They rotate around them. In some countries, it's just one or two, slightly more over here. But still, it's the kind of like the top, you know, there's three or four teams that tend to win it. And for a team like Leicester to come from effectively nowhere, one of the favourites to go down is famously 5,000-1 to win the Premier League title, which some lucky punter managed to get a few quid on and then walk away with it, was wonderful. I remember actually on this very pod, I think it was Terry who said, people are still not going to believe it. Even when they're walking away with the title, people will be saying, they're never going to win it. They're never going to win it. Such was the disbelief, even with just weeks to go where it was clear that they were going to win it.
Yeah.
You know, no one could quite believe what was happening. And I think that just shows the scale of what they achieved there. And, you know, they had the right manager, they had the right players, and they had an owner that seemed to be putting the money in the right place and knew what he was doing. And sadly, of course, it's well documented that he unfortunately died in that horrific crash just outside of the stadium. And then the torch was passed to his family, who really didn't live up to the expectations. I think they could have, well, could have, should have achieved more. But it seems like they've really messed it up. And, you know, they've been in breach of the financial rules on several occasions. They lost 6 points this season, which I think even without those, they'd still be in a lot of trouble. Well, they would be. They'd still be in the bottom three. So, yeah, it's a really, really bad time for them. You think about 10 years ago, they were preparing to lift the title and looking forward to a season in the Champions League. And it's looking very, very likely now that they're going to be starting next season in the third tier.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is, quite the fall from grace.
It is. Because one of the miraculous things about their title win was that as recently as 2009, they were playing in the third tier. They were playing League One football for one season. And that was part of the whole mistake that they'd come from this to win the Premier League. But, Terry, I mean, there will be some people that would be quite pleased to see Leicester going down having received a points deduction.
Do you think so?
Yes. I'm looking at you, for instance.
See, now, I have not come here to bury Leicester. I am have got over my Leicester hate, which fueled me during that 2016. I was the only person outside of Forest fans that didn't want Leicester to win the league. But I'm not going to go into my reasons why Leicester hate, because I don't want to make this podcast about me for a change. So, yeah, I mean, I do feel bad for this situation, because after the owner died in the manner that he did, it looks like it may well have set off something of a chain of events. I think the new owners didn't make necessarily the right recruitment, with the exception of Enzo Maresca, who obviously was an outstanding manager, but of course he left. If he had stayed another season, I think that there's a possibility that Leicester might have stabilised at the Premier League level, and then this horror would not have happened. Although they may well have still found themselves in PSR problem. And I think that that's the problem, isn't it? Is that they weren't able to manage the club's finances very well, and that you feel is the underlying problem as to why they've fallen as far as they have. I don't really take any pleasure in seeing Leicester relegated here. I think that they've suffered enough, but we do see it sometimes, don't we, with clubs that do very well, but perhaps it's not the same thing. But I think about Leeds most recently, you know, again, they overreached quite a lot to excess, really, and then fell back. Leicester's a bit difficult, because I wouldn't characterise their title win as overreach at all. I think that they won that fair and square, and arguably one of the few clubs in recent years to win the league without significant overreach. So bearing in mind, over the last 20 years, we've had City and we've had Chelsea, who have won the title, and we now understand and have a better idea about the underlying causes of them. When you think of their successes, when you think about it in those terms and you think about Leicester, it actually becomes all the more tragic. I mean, I think Leicester are genuinely one of the good guys who have just sort of overreached. I say just, who have overreached, and it's led to this situation. So it is actually, I think, quite sad. So there's me repenting my unreasonable Leicester hate from the years gone by, and I'm seeking absolution from the football gods from there. I think that it's rough. And also there's a guy at work I know, and he's a really he's a nice guy, and he's a big Leicester fan, and he's going to be gutted, and I'm gutted for him.
Yeah.
Because I am a human being.
Yeah,
and I feel bad for people when they feel bad.
Well, there is some potential glimmer of hope for them, but I still think now that they're in a pretty desperate situation. At the moment, they are 8 points short of safety with 3 games to go. There is a possibility that West Brom may be hit with a points deduction, but at the moment, that seems unclear as to what that might be, which is not satisfactory at all, is it, Jan, for a season to end?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we touched on it last week. It's just, it's really sad that that end of the of a really strong division and a really exciting and infinitely watchable division, that you've got teams that are going down because they've had points taken off and because of mismanagement, effectively. And it's a really sad state of affairs.
Can I make a suggestion here, guys, to anyone who might be listening? I mean, is there a case to say, actually, that all points deductions should just automatically kick in at the beginning of the following season?
Well,
so if you're if you're found guilty during the season, surely it's just cleaner to say, look, and if everyone starts the season understanding that that's how it works, and I realise this is an opportunity then for clubs to game the system to an extent, won't they? Yeah. Say, well, let's just say that actually what we're going to do is, because points deduction during this point really does mess with the sporting integrity of the league, in my opinion, of that league season, because they're a random element, and I don't think that they're a particularly good idea. I think that is some wisdom in having these points deduction then kick in the following season, whatever division that you end up in. There's no perfect way of doing this, but it feels that that's cleaner and more just. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me.
It seems to make sense to me, but I think there are people who say, well, if you're being punished, then you should be punished with the likelihood of going down. But I suppose you're just kicking it on to next season, but at least everyone knows where everyone starts. So I think that's a perfectly reasonable idea. Of course, you do also get the people who would say, well, if there's been a change in ownership, now we've got the new ownership have the problem. But I suppose that's sort of seen, isn't it? But unless you're Chelsea, of course.
Unless you're Chelsea, of course. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just what boils the wee even more so about the whole Chelsea thing. Of course, because Sheffield Wednesday have this problem, because the new prospective owner of Wednesday, he doesn't know whether or not there's going to be a 15-point deduction. And a lot of that depends on whether or not he can satisfy their football debts. It all feels murky and unsatisfactory to me when you consider that you've got people who have treated on a wide scale, who have been punished leniently. And, of course, another club that's not been punished at all and never will.
Never, ever will.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
No.
It's not going to happen.
But, I mean, I think custom suggests that it will be 4 points, maybe six for West Brom, which I suspect isn't going to be enough to save Leicester, is it? So,
no. It might be enough to save Oxford United. And, yes, Blackburn, it really will make them safe because they're still on the edge there. So yes, plenty of fun and games. Well, some not exactly fun, but plenty of intrigue going on in the relegation zone. And of course, there is still a big battle for the automatic place, because Ipswich dropped points at the weekend. It's now they're on 76, Millwall are on 76, Southampton are on 75, Middlesbrough on 73 for that last automatic place. That is going right down to the wire. The game coming up between Southampton and Ipswich is going to be huge. Huge, I tell you, huge. Jan, who's your money on there? Ipswich do have an extra game over everyone.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be telling for them. But in terms of form, I mean, Southampton are absolutely tearing up trees.
Yeah.
So they could probably do without the semi-final of the FA Cup. I just think that they're in such good form that it's going to be difficult. And in Ipswich have got a slip up in them. We saw that at the weekend. Yeah, for me, it is Southampton.
Do without the FA Cup, Terry. Do without the FA Cup. They've got 3 potential trips to Wembley coming up, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, there's a strong argument to say that Southampton are the best team in England right now. There really is. And they've got the momentum going with them. They've got that game against Ipswich. If they are just going to be able to pin their ears back and head to the finish, then they could win it all, Graham. They really could, actually. They could be playing in the Europa League next season.
Wow.
I know that sounds silly. They will almost certainly lose to Manchester City in the semi-final and put an end to that. And I think that that is probably what's likely to happen. But they are playing so well right now. And City, to be fair, they've got a whole load of bacon on another pan that they got to fry up yet. So, you know, I don't know whether or not that's a terrible. No, that was just terrible. It was just shocking. I would delete that. I would genuinely delete that.
It's got to stay in.
They've got other fish to fry is basically really what I was going to say. But I just went to bacon.
Some people like frying bacon. That's all you got to say, right?
Anyway, so apologies for all the bacon haters out there. I didn't mean that.
There ain't
all.
No bacon.
Harry, are you very, very hungry by any chance?
I am. I always do this podcast before I eat.
That's because I want you hungry. I want you hungry for your takes.
Hungry for takes. When actually I'm hungry for bacon. I'm having a steak as well, which is...
So that's it. So. You've got meat hangers there.
Let me just take another run at that then in that case. I think that City have obviously got their title aspirations. That's now opened up for them, as we've discussed earlier. There's a possibility that they might be distracted, but they do have the hunger and they have, you know, the desire, I think. I think they'll be a part of them. They'll want to win the FA Cup because they'll want to make up for, you know, losing in the final last year. So it feels to me as though Southampton can do this as long as the semi-final doesn't trip up their momentum. I think Southampton can do this, finish in the top two, and then go up automatically. They certainly have deserved it. It's a remarkable run.
Yes, it is indeed. Now, I think that City-Southampton semi-final is going to be one for the ages. I think it's going to be very similar to the one that Coventry played against United a couple of seasons back. And it's going to have just a disappointing finish to it as well. But, of course, it's going in the box set. It's on Saturday evening, along with Chelsea Leeds on the following day, which I also think is going to be a classic. I really hope so. I think it's going to be 1970 vibe there, isn't it?
Feels proper old school, that, doesn't
proper
it?
Proper old school. Feels great. Yeah, we want an orange ball played in a mud bath.
Muddy pitch. Exactly. That's what we want.
Yeah, absolutely. I really can't.
12 yellow cards, 2 reds.
And a Leeds win.
Yes.
Yeah, and a Leeds win. I mean, like, they've got to be the favourites. They've got to be the favourites. The Chelsea are absolute toilet right now. So
there's also on Friday night, if you want to see how Maria Luisa Etta gets on in charge of Union Berlin, they are taking on Leipzig on Friday night, and that's on the iPlayer. So get involved with that. And if you want to see what we think of all the games that we're reviewing over the weekend, all 7 games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe to our Substack, which is free. Free. Yes, still free after all these years, and it will be free for as long as we keep doing it. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
The milk cup? Why did I say milk cup?
Is that what it should be called, Terry?
Yeah, but I was about to say bus fares, and it came out as milk cup.
Okay, yeah.
That happens to everyone.
Cognitive decline. Cognitive decline. Cognitive decline. Okay.